You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the Political Cesspool Radio Program, everyone. It's the live broadcast for Saturday evening, May the 17th. I'm your host, James Edwards, and it is now quite the honor to welcome back to the show an old friend, a man who anyone who has listened to this show for more than a few weeks will have undoubtedly heard, a man who has logged more appearances with us than any other single guest dating back to 2004. He is, of course, the one and only Reverend Ted Pike, the director of the National Prayer Network, a Christian conservative watchdog organization. His website is appropriately named truthtellers.org. Reverend Pike, welcome back.
Well, thanks for having me, James.
A pleasure as always. And, folks, one of the things I really admire and appreciate about Ted's work is that he seamlessly ties together the traditional faith of our fathers, Christianity, with some of our signature issues, and he has been an expert at unmasking the not-so-hidden hand of power here in this country. TruthTellers.org, certainly among my daily reads, make it one of yours as well. And a couple of great articles have been posted there recently, and we're going to talk to Ted about one specifically, and perhaps we can even work in the second, which is an article even more recent pertaining to so-called cyber hate laws. But let's first go back to the father of that proposed incarnation, hate crimes legislation. And you have found, Ted, a pretty egregious double standard with regards to how hate crimes charges are levied, correct?
Absolutely. And I have the authority of the Attorney General of the United States, Eric Holder, in 2009, before the Senate Judiciary Committee, Holder very frankly stated that the federal hate crimes law, the Matthew Shepard hate crimes bill, would not indict Jews, Muslims, women, and other minorities for hate crimes. Instead, they would be indicted under civil penalties. Only whites, males, Christians, and so on would be vulnerable to indictment if they were charged with a hate crime against a black or homosexual and so on. And what this means, of course, is that from the highest level of our government, we are being told that there is no equality under the law in American Jewish jurisprudence anymore, but that favored groups, so-called historically persecuted groups, such as homosexuals, blacks, etc., will be given preferential treatment, and they will escape the triple penalties, which will be leveled against people like those Amish Christians or not-so-perfect Christians who are now spending up to 15 years in prison under the Matthew Shepard Act for pruning the hair, facial hair, and on the heads of their theological rivals, did them no physical damage, but it was considered by Holder and the FBI to be an egregious hate crime worthy of up to 15 years in prison.
You know, things like this, you know, it's absolutely jaw-dropping. You've been in this all your life, Reverend Pike. I've been in this very actively and publicly for 10 years, and every now and then you can still come across statements from, dare I say, leaders, certainly those in positions of power and authority, that just absolutely boggle the mind. You would almost think that it is so profoundly wicked that they must be joking. Unfortunately, they're not. And as you mentioned, Eric Holder has gone on the record saying that for all intents and purposes, hate crimes charges will only be filed against whites, white Christians, white males, or some variation thereof. Under no circumstances will hate crimes charges be tacked on to an offense committed by a minority, a homosexual, against a white person. I guess even in the hypothetical situation. You have a black person saying, I'm about to kill you because you're white. I hate all white people. 100 witnesses around. Theoretically, he would not even be charged with a hate crime. And hate crime legislation, as we all know, is preposterous in the first place because there's no crime that could possibly be committed that for which there aren't already laws on the books that will provide more than enough punishment for the perpetrator. So, again, as you mentioned, what you have with hate crimes laws is just added punishment for the only demographic of the population not to be protected from such heinous measures.
Yes, I should mention that we have a video at truthtellers.org. I think it's about an 8 or 10 minute video with actual footage of Eric Holder making these statements before the Senate Judiciary Committee. It's right there on the homepage. You'll see it. It's a must watch. This all is very very relevant because in December, Jewish police. Now, people are probably not familiar with the idea of Jewish police, but Jewish control. The Orthodox Hasidic Jews in Brooklyn and other regions of New York City are so strong that they have insisted that they have the right to their own police departments, fire departments, and basically their own legal system, especially regarding pedophilia, sex crimes against children. They insist that these cases come before rabbinic Jewish courts, not before civil authorities, and they pretty much get their way. And even if some big child molestation case does erupt into the onto the state level or the municipal level, the district attorney of New York of Brooklyn is so in the pocket of the Jews that he usually gives them sweetheart deals and so on, or they can flee to Israel and so on. But what happened on December 13th of this last year was that a black homosexual student, Taj Patterson, was simply walking through a Brooklyn park, and something like 15 of these Shomrim or Hasidic Orthodox police started to chase him. They grabbed him. They beat him up very severely at length. And lots of people stood around watching it and actually threatening to call the civil police, which were not called. Here you have the Jewish police beating a black gay student practically senseless. They blinded him in one eye, many other wounds. But a grand jury just a few weeks ago, at the time of my recent article about this at truthtellers.org, a grand jury let at least five of the Jewish defendants go from any kind of hate crimes charges. They were loudly shouting anti-homosexual epithets for all to hear. They were fulfilling the classic ADL criteria of a bias-motivated hate crime. Bias motivation in the first place, prejudice, hate, and then resulting in violent beating, assault, and battery, and so on. And they
were hold it right there, folks. We're going to dive right back into this matter right when we're leaving off. When we return from this break, we're going to fill in the rest of the story, and you don't want to miss it.
To get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And now, back to tonight's show.
Welcome back, everybody. Our featured guest for this evening, Reverend Ted Pike, was just getting into the heart of the matter of a blatant and flagrant double standard with regards to the selective enforcement of hate crimes charges. Ted, it involved a black homosexual and allegedly Jewish assailant. It was something, of course, that we didn't hear at all in the news. You know, if you could imagine, and of course this never happened, you would certainly hear about it. I mean, they tried very hard to cast George Zimmerman as a typical Anglo-Saxon. That's how desperate and starved they are for there to be white Christians behaving in this sort of a manner, but they can't find that. But if you could imagine this black homosexual being beaten by white Christians rather than Jews in New York, I think you might have heard about it somewhere else other than truthtellers.org and Liberty News Radio Network, right, Ted?
Well, yes. If these were white attackers yelling homophobic slurs while beating a black homosexual, it would have been front page news across the nation. And it would also have resulted in hate crimes charges for all attackers, not just five of the 15. But these assailants face no tripled penalties, no hate crimes charges. Why? Because they are Jewish, as Eric Holder made provision for. Here we have a person.
Yeah, and you were talking about actually getting into the details of that attack, and it was fairly horrific, I guess, and some of the things that were being said. And again, just, and that's on the record. There, this was, I guess, in some ways not disputed that this had occurred, and just completely glossed over by the media. And so you certainly, that's just, you can chalk up another mark there for, if you ask yourself who's in control of our media, well, this is another one you can file away as evidence in our case. But continue on with your excellent analysis and commentary of this hypocrisy that we witnessed in situations like this.
Well, the indictment of the five Shomrim attackers without hate crimes charges contrasts sharply with the quickness of the government to label, indict, and prosecute 15 Amish Christians in 2012 for the hate crime of forcibly shaving the heads of their theological rivals. And
cutting someone's hair, and they're looking at 15 years in prison.
Up to 15 years. The Justice Department, the FBI, were very proud. They did a lot of posturing, saying they had served justice by meting out the triple penalty prison sentences of up to 15 years for 15 Amish adults. And as I write in my latest article, disrupting their families and effectively orphaning quite a number of children. And in my article at Truth Tellers, I asked the question again, who contrived these perverse, discriminatory laws? The Jewish Anti-Defamation League in 2009, after the hate bill was passed, they said, our legal experts pioneered hate crime laws and work to implement them nationwide. But I go on to point out in this article at truthtellers.org, the title is No Hate Crime When Jews Beat Up Black Gay. I go on to explain and marvel how that the religious Christian right in America goes chasing after SPLC at the slightest provocation. They portray the Southern Poverty Law Center, which is known as ADL South, as this great Satan that is calling them haters and so on. The truth of the matter is that the ADL is massively more powerful and organized and has a history of clout with the U.S. government going clear back into the 1920s and 30s. And what I really believe is that the Southern Poverty Law Center was actually designed to draw off the attention and the vitriol of the religious right, while the real culprit, the real fountain of perverse bias crimes legislation worldwide, ADL, is given immunity. And tragically, WorldNet Daily and its very pro-Zionist editor and owner, Joe Farah, is actually giving credibility to ADL repeatedly on the pages of WorldNet Daily. They had a recent article after the Kansas City shooting in which Bob Unruh, the staff writer for Farah, held up ADL as the authority on fighting anti-Semitism, growing anti-Semitism in the world. And what is really happening, I believe, is that with the emergence of increasing criticism of Israel among evangelicals, the evangelical bastions of pro-Israelism like WorldNet Daily are actually turning now to ADL for propaganda resources, argumentation to hold back so-called anti-Semitism within the evangelical right. And so Unruh goes on to describe anti-Semitism as believing that the Jews control the media, which is easily documented, and the Jews are proud of the fact, and anti-Semitic to say Jews dominate Wall Street. Very, very obvious bastions of Jewish power, but they're simply taking intact ADL propaganda, and because the evangelicals are really quite intellectually impoverished compared to really sharp frontline academics and researchers who are critical of Israel, like Norman Finkelstein and Mearsheimer and Walt and so on, the evangelicals are way behind the times. And so what they do in desperation is just say to the ADL, you come over, you show us how to fight Christian anti-Semitism. And this is tragic because, as I point out in this article, Joe Farah really did do a great service for the evangelicals back around 2005 when he, very largely after I had exploded the whole fiasco of the incarceration of 11 Christians in Philadelphia in 2005, he came on the scene and began to say the same thing, that hate crimes laws were a danger not only in the United States but in Canada and so on. He performed a service, and he worked for God and Country and Truth at that time, but he has stated he's very afraid of the ADL. He's afraid they'll call him anti-Semitic. So what does he do? He just invites the ADL over to educate the millions of Christian conservatives who come to truth WorldNet Daily every day.
Well, just like you have with the whole racism and racist racket, I mean, it's not the definition that people believe it is, where you have an irrational hatred for people of another skin color. It's basically just become, as we talk about so often on this show, a socio-political nuclear bomb that's used to stifle conservative dissent and objective criticism of certain elements of other ethnic communities. And that's what you have certainly with anti-Semitism as well. It's not an irrational hatred of Jewish people. It's not that you want to go out and Holocaust 6 million Jews, hatred of all things Jewish. No, I mean, now the definition of anti-Semitism has been stretched to the point where if you state the obvious, that Jews have a disproportionate amount of control of a media, of the media, or of academia, yes, or of government, which they obviously do, and which, as you mentioned, Jews have bragged about and claimed and owned for themselves in many of their publications. It's fine if you're Jewish to admit these truths, but if you are a Christian and you question if it's what's best in the best interest of our nation, our once Christian nation, that these people who are obviously very anti-Christian have such a disproportionate amount of control based upon their percentage of the population, you are, in fact, no better than a Nazi. And,
yes.
And, you know, WorldNet Daily has come a long way in talking about some issues. Colin, I apologize, folks. I was in Newton Stride when I ran smack dab into the wall that was our commercial break. As you know, I am out of town with my wife and daughter tonight on vacation doing the show, not in the studio, as I typically do, but on the cell phone tonight connected to our network in Utah. And it's a little bit harder for me to hear my cues over the cell phone without those nice headsets that are afforded to us at our radio station, particularly when I'm talking. But the good news is we still have Reverend Ted Pike with us. And before that last break, I was responding to Reverend Pike's commentary in which he pointed out the fact that, like a lot of evangelical Christians, Joe Farah of WorldNet Daily seems to be serving two masters here. And to me, Ted, it's irreconcilable to support a lobby that has done more to mock, ridicule, disenfranchise, and to drum up outright hatred of the Christian faith than any other entity. And certainly that's what you have with the radical Zionist, radical Jewish lobby. And, you know, they would say, of course, well, it's anti-Semitic to even offer objective criticism of anything that they do. And it's sad that Theron, there are some good things that Woman Daily does, has bought into that, but he's certainly not alone in terms of evangelical circles aiding and abetting the folks who are behind, as you were talking about for the bulk of this hour, these hate crime hypocrisies that are selectively enforced against Christians, or at the very least, white Gentiles.
Yes, absolutely. When I was fighting the passage of the federal hate bill, I was told by an evangelical Christian conservative writer and leader that I should not in any way mention the ADL as part of my case against hate laws. He said the evangelicals absolutely will shut you out. They will have nothing to do with you if you criticize ADL. And the paradox is that the evangelicals and their leaders are afraid of ADL. ADL should be called the Defamation League, because they have
right.
proven that they will defame anyone who comes against them, exposes them, or calls them Jewish or anything like that. And so there's this love-hate, love-fear relationship in which they bless them as God's chosen people and leave them completely alone, untouchable, and yet they know that the ADL is mean, the ADL is vindictive, ADL will destroy anybody who comes against them. So that there's really very little real love there. There is tremendous fear behind the scenes. I imagine this is exactly the same case in Congress. The Republican, everybody scrapes before the AIPAC and the Jewish lobby, proclaiming their love for Israel is greater than anyone else there, blah, blah, blah. And yet they know very well that these people they ostensibly love will in a moment put up another candidate and massively fund them and destroy their political career.
That's absolutely right. And then another thing with these evangelicals, Ted, of course, is that the irony of it is they, as you said, claim them as God's chosen people. They can do no wrong, and it is those same people that they are blessing to their own detriment that have done everything in this country to remove God from the public square. Any
yes.
attack and assault on Christianity in academia, government, or the media normally has a common denominator, and, well, certainly we all know what that is. I want to ask you one more thing, and we certainly don't have the amount of time to dedicate to this, unfortunately, as we did the first topic, but they are very similarly related. You have a fresh article at truthteller.org about so-called planned cyber hate legislation.
Yes.
It's not just enough to keep you from talking out in public. Now you can't talk out on the Internet if certain people have their way. What's going on with this proposed cyber hate ban?
Well, ADL and SPLC practically salivate for the opportunity to come across the perfect shooter, some fanatic or extremist who is associated with the religious right, the anti-Zionist right, and who can be implicated if he goes crazy and shoots up the Holocaust Museum or some Jewish community center or synagogue and so on. They didn't quite find that in Frazier Glen Cross several months ago, but I believe that they decided they better go ahead and surf the momentum of this wave of opposition to so-called anti-Semitism in the world and in America. And so they put up a bill now before the House and the Senate called the Hate Crime Reporting Act of 2014. And you can get the bill numbers here at Truth Tellers. A couple of evidently Gentiles, Ed Markey and Hakeem Jeffries, submitted it to the Senate and the House. And the objective of this bill is to reinvestigate a report in 1993 under the Hate Crime Statistic Act, which looked into the question of whether Internet bias stimulates violent actions. And that original report in 1993 came up with the conclusion, no, it hasn't. There's no evidence that it does, very little evidence that it does. But what the ADL wants to do now is to say that we live in a different age in which the internet is saturated with hundreds of hate-motivated violence websites, just brimming with potential for hate-motivated violence against minorities. And ADL wants to come in and pontificate to get a pulpit in the government now, saying that real stiff legislation, particularly on the internet, is now necessary to limit and restrain and even ban cyber hate. This is the kind of legislation under Section 13A in Canada, the Internet Hate Law, which says if you even say things that are likely to stimulate hatred of federally protected minorities, you can be fined $5,000, and repeat offense, of course, means contempt of court charges and prison. And so this is an effort to move forward. I should also mention that just this week, the ADL came out with a worldwide survey of supposedly anti-Semitic attitudes everywhere, proclaiming now that one out of four inhabitants of this planet is strongly infected with anti-Semitic attitudes. And I will have an article.
Right? I mean, there's never, you know, certainly they don't want to eradicate this phantom of anti-Semitism, because then they would be out of business. Anti-Semitism is more rampant today than ever before, even though people couldn't be more oblivious to.
Yeah, that's right. But I will have an article out on this ADL poll, which is skewed from beginning to end. And I'll be unskewing it. I'll be disentangling it for my readers. And I hope people can come to truthtellers.org and read that article, which will probably come out Sunday night.
Well, we would love to have you back to talk about that in a future episode of this program, to be sure. But when talking about this now, let us be clear that this cyber hate legislation has not yet passed. It's not yet been enacted into law. We'll keep you posted. But I'm sure that the terms are so, the wording is so vague, Ted, that anything and everything could pass as so-called cyber hate. It's not necessarily a website that says, let's go kill all the Jews, you know, something that we would never advocate and certainly not associate with anyone who would. But we're not talking about things like that. It could be, could cyber hate be construed as something as simply asking if there is too much preponderance of power by the
Well, absolutely. ADL will fill that report to Congress with its own definition, twisted definitions of hate and bias and anti-Semitism. That's the whole purpose of it. We should be aware that the original hate crimes law of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which was this so-called hate provision, Title 18, Section 2A, says that if any public statement is made which incites another person to commit a hate crime, the original speaker, whether he's a talk show host or a pastor in his pulpit or even somebody on the street corner, will also be indicted for a hate crime, will have the same penalty against him as the one who performed the actual deed.
That is unreal.
That was the original hate crimes law, really, but it was unenforceable because there were so many provisions and state limitations on federal intrusion into state jurisprudence. But,
Ted, I hear them playing our music again. Folks, follow up on this story as it continues to develop at truthtellers.org. And thanks for staying with us for extended time tonight. We'll have you back very soon.
Thank you so much, James. God bless.
God bless you, brother.